Welcome to Earth Matters, environmental and social justice stories from around Australia and beyond. This episode is produced at the studios of 3CR in Naarm, Melbourne, on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Earth Matters is distributed nationally through the Community Radio Network. I'd like to pay my respects to the elders, past and present, and extend that respect to other First Nations Australians who may be listening to this broadcast. I'm your host, Claudia Craig. Welcome to another episode of Earth Matters.
Extremely devastating. It's worth remembering that Southern Australia, the great the waters around South Australia where these impacts are occurring, are extremely, one, biodiverse, and two, unique. So around 70% of the species we get on reefs around South Australia there are endemic. They're unique to the Great Southern Reef, to Southern Australia. And once they're gone, they're gone.
Dr. Scott Bennett, Senior Lecturer in Marine Ecology at the University of Tasmania. This week on Earth Matters, we put the spotlight on this devastating algal phenomena strangulating the South Australian coast and rocking communities and scientists. While the causes of the bloom are becoming clearer, there are many unknowns, making the future difficult to predict. Nurrunjeri Elder Derek Walker is among the many facing uncertainty arising from the bloom. Derek is a sustainable fisherman harvesting kuris, or pippies as they are more widely known, on the Coorong. Shell fishing has been part of Nurrunjeri life for thousands of years, but with toxins infiltrating the sea floor where the kuri grow, operations are in shutdown and the local Nurrunjeri who work there are off the water. This week we speak to Nurrunjeri Elder Derek Walker about the impact of the algal bloom on shell fishing and community. But first, we get a rundown of the what, when and why of this devastating algal spread from Dr. Scott Bennett of the University of Tasmania. He spoke to 3CR Breakfast presenter Sonia Randall. Let's go to him now.
Yes, so the algal bloom in South Australia has been occurring since early March this year, and it seems to have been triggered by a combination of factors. One of the primary ones was a really strong marine heat wave that occurred off the coast of South Australia through summer, where we saw sea temperatures well above, you know, a couple of degrees, 2 to 3 degrees above our long-term temperatures. And that was in combination with really warm air temperatures and uncharacteristically still conditions. So we didn't get the usual strong westerly winds. Conditions were really still. And so we had these really warm, calm conditions on a layer of quite nutrient-rich water. And that was basically the perfect environment for these microalgae to bloom. And since then, we've seen just enormous blooms of microalgae. The primary species are species of Karenia. Yeah, first noticed down around Victor Harbour on the Fluorio Peninsula, but has since spread, you know, across through Kangaroo Island, up the Gulf of St Vincent, like into the metropolitan coast around Adelaide and across to the Spencer Gulf. And we now see it moving up towards Whyalla, where we have these really unique cuttlefish aggregation.
And, I mean, to me it seems like we're in the middle of winter now and things should be abating somewhat.
Yeah, that's right. And that was, I guess, the hope of authorities for quite a while. You know, when this took off, we were like, oh, let's just... The hope was when winter storms hit and all the seawater was mixed up, this would dissipate, this bloom would dissipate and disappear. That hasn't happened. We've seen it continue. It has moved. So where it initially bloomed, for example, isn't necessarily still blooming. It has abated there and cleaned up. But it keeps moving and it keeps propagating. And now it's over in the Spencer Gulf and putting the cuttlefish aggregations at risk. But Yeah, this extends it. It extends over 500 kilometres of coastline. Literally tens of thousands of animals have died and have washed up, let alone all those underwater that remain unseen. They're seeing now the records of the Karenia are quite close to the bottom. And one of the ideas is they're actually now basically feeding themselves, receiving the nutrition, the nutrients from decomposing marine life on the seafloor. And that's actually helping stimulate the continuing bloom of of them. But again, it's still really early days. There's so many unknowns with this algal outbreak at the moment. One of the other really terrifying things, but unknown things, is these blooms are one of the reasons they're killing so much marine life is because of the toxins they're producing. And they're producing a type of toxin, brevitoxins, which are actually harmful to human health. And we still don't know exactly what species these are coming from. These brevitoxins are not known to the common species of Karenia that have been identified in the bloom. So there's other species in there, and there's just a lot about the underlying causes and makeup of this algal bloom that are still unknown.
We're not seeing the fish washing up on our shores here. So perhaps some idea of just how widespread the impacts are and what it's like around the coasts of South Australia at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredibly devastating across the coast of South Australia. It's really unprecedented in the magnitude of impacts on marine life. We've not seen anything like this, particularly from an algal bloom in Australia before. So currently there's more than 450 species that have been recorded washed up onto beaches of South Australia. And these species range from everything. I think there's been something like 10 great white sharks wash up. So everything from big sharks and rays right down to the smallest critters, so like little sand hoppers, dead, a lot of sponges and seaweeds and habitat-forming species. So this is and everything in between. So it really has impacted the entire food web, the entire marine ecosystem. And that's incredibly devastating and obviously really hard, particularly for the South Australians to see. In a sense, it's fortunate that we're actually getting this stuff washing up on shore. So we do have, you know, this visual, you know, cue that the impact's underwater, because we know it's highly likely that what's washing up on shore is really the tip of the iceberg, and the true devastation is underwater. And so far, there's only been, so we've done some preliminary surveys over there. I've involved in some preliminary surveys back in mid-June, but that's really the true impacts and the full extent of the impacts underwater are unknown.
What is the long-term impact, or is the suspected long-term impact, on the health of the marine ecosystems?
I mean, that's a great question, and it's still probably too early to tell. As I said, we still don't know the full extent of these impacts, but we expect that the long-term impacts could be extremely devastating. It's worth remembering that Southern Australia, the great the waters around South Australia where these impacts are occurring, are extremely, one, biodiverse, and two, unique. So around 70% of the species we get on reefs around South Australia there are endemic. They're unique to the Great Southern Reef, to Southern Australia. And once they're gone, they're gone. And we have, you know, until now, these waters around South Australia have been a real refuge and sentinel for our unique reef species. We've been seeing mass population declines in the southeast, like off the coast of Victoria and Tasmania, and the southwest off the southwest coast of WA. And that's because, you know, it's been the southeast and southwest which has really been warming quite quickly, much warmer than average rates of global ocean warming. And South Australia until now has been quite protected from that. That's all out the window now. So these really unique species are being heavily impacted, and it is quite possible that we may lose species there are chances that we will see species extinctions, potentially, certainly mass population declines. And a lot of these species are really iconic and unique. So we think about South Australia, we think about leafy sea dragons, for example, only found through southern Australia, particularly South Australia and southwestern Australia. We've seen mass mortality and wash-ups of some of these iconic species like leafies. And as well, a lot of really iconic light-attached species, things like our blue devilfish. We know they live for a really long time. They just stay under the same rocks. They're really iconic tourist attraction. These sorts of species are being heavily impacted. And, yeah, the long-term recovery of that, first we need to be able to get in the water and assess the full extent of these impacts, and then we'll be able to make a judgment.
You're listening to Earth Matters on the Community Radio Network. This week, we're talking about the mass algal bloom infiltrating the South Australian coastline and the impacts on the marine ecosystem. We've just heard from Dr. Scott Bennett, Senior Lecturer in Marine Ecology at the University of Tasmania. Now we take a deep dive, quite literally, to the seafloor where shellfish are under threat as a result of the destructive algal bloom. Derek Walker is a Nurrunjeri elder whose connection to country on the Coorong goes back generations. He oversees a sustainable fishing business, employing local Nurrunjeri men and women. The business harvests pippies, or kuti, as they are known in Nurrunjeri. He tells us about the relationship his people have with the waters and the implications for the local community of the algal bloom. Well, thank you for joining us on Earth Matters. I wondered if you could start off by introducing yourself and the work that you do.
Sure. My name's Derek Walker. I'm Executive Director of Kuri Co. Kuri is Nurrunjeri for pippies, and so it's a fishing company. I also manage Northern Māori Aboriginal Corporation, which is a not-for-profit organisation that undertakes working for country, working on country programs, amongst other things. But really, it's about, you know, caring for country. Nurrunjeri country is bordered by Kaurna country, Paramount country, so in and around Murray Bridge, down to, around Kingston, Cape Jaffa, and across to the Fluorio, down to the bottom of the Fluorio, really, at Cape Jarvis. So it's quite a big area. It takes in the Lower Lakes and Coorong and the Murray River, and effectively, Nurrunjeri are water people, so the fresh water of the river system and the lakes, the sea water and the Coorong.
What areas have been affected by the algal bloom, and what are you seeing?
Yeah, look, the algal bloom is first showed itself further down Fluorio Peninsula, Nurrunjeri Sea Country, and it's extended right through to the Murray Mouth. It's certainly pushed into the Coorong partways, and it's causing us concern at this point in time because the algal bloom is a source of a brevetoxin that affects aquatic life and certainly bottom feeders. So, pippies, kuri sit on the bottom and filter feeders. And as they filter, they take on the brevetoxin, which causes impact to the kuri itself. And particularly earlier on, was causing significant mortality. And obviously a problem with around human consumption. So, when it got to a level that caused concern, what we saw was shellfish industries being closed down, and a number of companies, both on York Peninsula and Kangaroo Island and on the Fluorio, have stopped production, particularly around the shellfish industry.
with businesses closing down, that would have a big impact on community and people who are reliant on that for their livelihood.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we undertake the harvest to Kuri, where the young Narangiri on the beach, a team of young men, that harvest Kuri. We have some team of predominantly young women that pack Kuri and other bait, you know, and other bait within our factory. And so it's, yes, the guys that are harvesting aren't harvesting at the moment because the levels of revitoxin in the water is high enough to shut the business down. So, you know, we're concerned the longer this goes, the livelihood of these young men, but also our company, Kuriko, starts to be jeopardised. Yeah, and we're not sure. There's unknowns. We're not sure how long it's going to hang around, and so it's causing us much concern, yeah.
So how are people handling it in the community? How are people feeling?
The young fellows are a bit nervous at the moment. We're fortunate. We have, other activity that we undertake. So, the working on country activity, so planting up trees at the moment and a few other things that we could actually, put them to. They want to be back doing the work that they enjoy. But also we've just invested quite a bit of money and time into developing a harvest company, which will be owned by these young men. That's been a considerable investment, and we're not sure where things are going to go from here.
Has the government offered any direct support to people like yourself and your workers for this hopefully temporary pause on operations?
Yeah, well, we're feeling like there is some support available. It's a bit of a process, so we'll work through that. We are working through that at this very present time, and we're trusting that some of that support will at least support us to hang on for a bit. Yeah, so yes, we have access, and we think we're in line for some support.
That's good to hear.
So we hand harvest our coolies. We undertake a process that is supportive of looking after country, and we want to continue to do that.
Can you share some of the history of the Kuri and their significance for the Narangiri people?
Kuri sustained us for 50,000 years. So our community have been harvesting Kuri as a protein source for a long period of time. The very fact that we're involved in an industry that harvests Kuri for economic gain just fits us. It fits us like a hand in a glove. And we're keen to continue to grow our business. We're about a 22% owner of the industry. We're a major industry player, we want to. Our primary objective is really about opportunity for our young people and the development of the Kuriko and our harvest crew, which harvests and hand harvests. So we have rakes with small nets on them, so there's no mechanical process in it. It's all done by hand. Our guys get out on the water, depending on the tide, from anywhere from 3 o'clock in the morning onwards, that process we will continue to harvest in that way because we see that as being important. It's certainly part of who we are, it's a cracker business that gets our guys back on country and able to support themselves and their families and their family around them. So it's we enjoy it, and if you talk to the young fellas about when they get on the beach. There's no better office in the world, they reckon. You know, Southern Ocean, Young Husband Peninsula, Kurong, yeah, it's home.
Ngunnawal Elder Derek Walker speaking about kudi, or pipis, shellfish that have sustained the Ngunnawal people of South Australia for thousands of years, and now under threat as a result of the destructive algal bloom. You're listening to Earth Matters on the Community Radio Network. We're going to talk some more to Derek and find out how the bloom is affecting cultural tourism in the area.
We take groups on our barge across to Young Husband and talk to them about our cultural heritage, so our connection to that particular bit of country. And that's sort of laid down at present because we don't want to expose people to any issues, because we know earlier on there were, you know, if you're going down on the beach, people were getting sore eyes and rashes and things, and we were a bit concerned about that. So, you know, we're taking a cautious approach at the moment. It would seem that it's a bit clearer, and well, the water hasn't been clearer in the whole period that this bravotoxin's been around at the moment, and so we, you know, we feel like we can we'll be able to push forward with a bit of that work. Also, understanding that you know, when we undertake a bit of that cultural tourism, if you like, we talk about, you know, our connection to country, but we also talk about the ecological issues that we're now facing at the moment with the algal bloom, and how that connection, the ecological character of the region, connects to cultural character and what that means for us. You know, what we've seen, not just through the algal bloom, but we've seen lots of difficulty around the ecology that is causing us as a community great concern. And so, you know, we're wanting to play a part in caring for country, but also, you know, putting some things in place that protect species. So there's certainly a significant amount of threatened species in and around on our country, and so you know, we're trying to do our bit to alleviate some of that difficulty by the work we do.
And in terms of the response to the situation, is there a coordinated approach to solutions for this? And to what extent are Indigenous groups and individuals being included in those discussions?
Yeah, there is a response team, so a state response to this algal bloom. There is advisory groups, and Indigenous people involved in those advisory groups, which is really cool. I think that there's been some things put forward around the development of a specific Aboriginal advisory forum group that would be able to put forward our concerns and be part of the solution. We're certainly keen to be involved in, you know, the collection of water samples and the work that might be helpful in, collecting the data and the science to come up with some solutions around this. But we also, acutely aware of the algal bloom itself is huge, it's been brought about from a number of factors, and so understanding, the reasoning behind it and how it came about, learning from others, being involved in the science of finding a solution is really important to us, but also we believe we come with something to offer. We come with a considerable amount of historical cultural understanding that could be of benefit in this whole process too as well. So, we we're wanting to support, you know, what the government's doing, but also, you know, what local people are wanting to do to have him put into providing a solution. We suspect that the government's committed to a certain amount of resource to go to this, and we'd like to be part of that resource too as well. We're a smaller player in a big world, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing all the things that we possibly can. And you know, we've seen significant change in our country. We know from an ecological perspective, in the last 30 years, there's been more loss ecologically than any other time in history, and so things have ramped up in a very short space of time. And if you think about 200 years, that is very short in the history of this country, and we're concerned about that, and there is enough concern out there in the community to start to play our bit. And so localised effort is really important. We can get out there and do some things. Our guys are on the water every day, and so, you know, what we're saying is we want to be part of the solution, and part of the solution is doing our bit as best we can, you know, around looking after our countries. The Young Husband Peninsula is like no other place on earth. And there's no one there other than our ancestors. So it's a nice spot to be, I tell you.
That was sustainable fisherman and Nadin Jetty elder Derek Walker speaking about the impact of the devastating algal bloom on the harvesting of cooties, a practice carried out by the Nadin Jetty people for millennia. Thanks also to Dr. Scott Bennett, Senior Lecturer in Marine Ecology at the University of Tasmania, for sharing his expertise about the ecological impact of the algal bloom and the uncertainty around its future. I'd also like to acknowledge Sonia Randall, who interviewed Dr. Bennett and has kindly shared the conversation with us. If you'd like to find out more about the algal bloom, including health advice, head to the South Australian Government website. We'll put details on our podcast notes at 3cr.org.au/Earth Matters. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their generous financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting this program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri Country in Naam. If you'd like to get in touch, you can send us an email at earthmatters3cr@gmail.com or message us on Facebook or Instagram. We'd love to hear from you.
Friends of the Earth Food Co-op is open. Get fresh produce and support local farmers and keep our grassroots community thriving through these unusual times. Organic veggie boxes and click and collect now available. Visit www.foefood.org/click-collect to place your orders. Or pop in store at 312 Smith Street and see how we're adapting with our new physical distancing layout. Shop organic and buy local. Made easy at Friends of the Earth. A proud 3CR supporter.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. Disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.